Thank you for listening to the Resources for Integrated Care podcast series, addressing menopause and health across the life course for dually eligible women with disability. This podcast is excerpted from a webinar presented live on October 16th, 2023. In this podcast, Dr. John Harris, Director of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, UPMC's McGee Women's Hospital Center for Women with Disabilities and Assistant Professor for the McGee Women's Research Institute, shares insights on how providers can support women with disabilities during menopause.
First, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the center where I work. The Center for Women with Disabilities and in Pittsburgh is an amazing center that's been around since 2001. Yearly, we care for, in person, about 420 individuals, as well as even more nurse and virtual visits. And about 61% of those are dually eligible individuals. We do provide a wide range of services, including well woman care, gynecologic consultations, pregnancy consultations, and surgical consultations. Our patients range from, 15 to 95, with many patients in the age range that's most appropriate for menopausal issues that we'll discuss today. The clinic would not be present without the amazing work of Dr. Sandra Wellner, who was a woman who developed a mobility disability as an adult and dedicated the rest of her life to improving care for women and health care. She was quite a dynamic individual, and besides starting multiple clinics, including the one in Pittsburgh, she also started a company that developed more accessible exam tables. She wrote a textbook, and she was inducted into the Hall of Fame for Persons with Disabilities before her untimely death in 2001. I'm joined by some amazing providers, including Julie McKechnie, who is a nurse midwife, Peter Bulova, who's an internal medicine physician to help with complex medical issues with our patients while they're receiving their women's health care, and then Jennifer Stevens is the nurse coordinator of the clinic, and the clinic would not run without her amazing oversight. So to zoom in on the discussion that Dr. Mark so aptly kind of cohesively described in the broad terms, I'm going to talk about how we can improve access for individuals by providing disability-competent care and addressing these menopause and health issues across the life course for these dually eligible women with disabilities. So first, as Dr. Marks has already described, there are facility accessibility issues, so ensuring availability of facilities, equipment, and appropriate appointment times for these individuals. Next, there are communication accessibility issues. So communicating with people with disability takes humility, openness, and requires a curiosity about an individual's abilities and preferences. And we'll talk a little bit more about that relating to menopause care. And then finally, tailoring decision-making support. So for everyone, they should have personalized decision-making, but individuals with disabilities do face unique risks and benefits to traditional treatment pathways, and physicians must communicate these parameters in a way that empowers individuals to make an informed decision that's best for them and is not kind of a blanket decision based on someone's disability status. So providers can help provide this kind of care by, in general, getting to know the specific needs and past experiences of each individual who needs this sort of care. It may take some extra time to understand exactly what that looks like, but once you have understood that basic fact, the next thing is to acknowledge that you may have ascertained that a person has a certain disability or certain mobility, sensory, or intellectual disability, but you have to remember that even though someone may have what looks like the same diagnosis, that everyone is different and their capabilities relating to performing tasks, providing history, and making a personalized decision about treatment may vary and should be individualized. So it's a good thing to spend more time and to understand each person as an individual. So now I'm going to focus on facility accessibility, and the first thing is preparation. So before an individual even interacts with a healthcare facility, it's best to be prepared as best as possible for that individual. So when possible, I'm going to ask some questions that we would like each facility to have thought about. Does the team know what each individual needs before they come, types of transfer or equipment that's needed, and a plan for space utilization and scheduling? Does the team have staffing to be able to provide this necessary care? So sometimes it's not only equipment, but it may require extra staff to assist with transfers or exams. Are the staff well trained to do this sort of care, including providing care for people with autism spectrum disorder or intellectual disability? And do they have adequate training with the equipment to keep the patient and the staff safe. Next, can the facility provide access to other services, ideally on the same day? So, for instance, in a well woman visit, it's really wonderful if we can also do a mammography visit at the same visit, if those services are co-located, as well as access to subspecialty care such as oncology, in my case, urogynecology, or even dentistry care. And then finally, do staff understand the historic challenges of people with disabilities, as well as the need to avoid stigma or bias when providing this care? This sort of historical knowledge helps us be more humble and helps us understand the limitations that we have because of our backgrounds and historical inequities. So next, thinking about this facility, we should think about accessibility as these individuals are starting to interact with the physical space. So how accessible is this location? Are there enough handicapped parking spaces? How wheelchair accessible are the van drop-off areas where many individuals may come by an access van or other disability accessible transportation? How much does parking cost? We provide vouchers at our facility because our valet services typically have a monetary charge with them, but the hospital has thankfully provided free services for individuals with disabilities. And in large buildings and hospitals, does the front desk know where the clinic is? Many times, if someone is new to the clinic or doesn't know where they're going, it's helpful to provide good access for individuals and their caregivers. Next, how accessible is the specific clinic space? That starts with check-in, where we want to make sure that the clinic check-in desk is low enough for people who utilize wheelchairs for mobility to be able to communicate clearly with staff, and is the waiting area accessible for people with wheelchairs? Next, is the waiting area accommodating for people with intellectual disabilities? Caregivers for intellectual disability prefer slightly larger waiting areas where there's a little bit more space for people so that people can feel comfortable. Finally, when we think about the specific clinic space and exam space, is there things like a wheelchair accessible scale? Is there enough space for a wheelchair or stretcher for transfer in the exam room? Is the exam table low enough to allow for transfers? For people that need a mechanical lift or Hoyer lift, is that available? Where is it? And are people trained to use it? For gynecologic exams, are there full support leg rests available? Traditional exam tables have small foot rests that only support people's heels and are not appropriate for people that may need additional assistance controlling or positioning legs. And are there tools available for people with intellectual disability or autism to feel comfortable? Next, we're going to go to menopause-related topics. So first, it's important to screen all individuals who could be at risk for menopause. So, for instance, screening tools like the Menopause Quick 6 questionnaire is a great way to screen for a variety of different symptoms people may have. We need to remember that these symptoms can vary depending on people's sensory, intellectual, or mobility disability. And for instance, in an intellectual disability, behavior changes and agitation may be associated with menopausal changes. And we need to remember that these symptoms can be relieved with a variety of treatments, including hormone replacement therapy. So again, we need to think as individually about each person who comes to our settings. And so for people with intellectual or cognitive impairment, some conditions associated with these conditions will be associated with early initiation of menopause. For instance, individuals with Down syndrome will often go into menopause in their late 30s or early 40s, about 10 years before individuals without Down syndrome. And it may, in some cases, be difficult to obtain a normal symptom history from the individual, but you can obtain one from caregivers or family members. And then for individuals with mobility disability, it's important to remember that menopausal symptoms may present differently with increases in some symptoms and less apparent other symptoms. And additionally, for people with mobility disability, there may be higher risks of bone loss, bone density loss, cardiovascular disease, weight gain, or impaired balance. For people with a sensory disability, that would be hard of hearing or deafness or vision impairment or blindness, there's certainly a need for more accessible menopause education materials. If this hasn't been well provided in the past, for instance, in the UK study in 2018 and 19, deaf and hard of hearing individuals noted that only 7% of these women were able to access menopause health information in British Sign Language, while 83% indicated that they would like access to this information in sign language. Physicians often rely on written materials for individuals that may be hard of hearing in a time-constrained office visit. Other medical conditions may take precedence and people may not get around to their menopausal concerns. And providers must conduct expanded screening for atypical menopausal symptoms, such as bladder infection screening. which may be more difficult if it's harder to obtain that urine culture. Again, the consequences of menopause include a variety of issues related to estrogen deficiency that include bone density loss. It's important to screen for this and also to manage it aggressively. There are a variety of medications that would be appropriate for osteoporosis in a general population as well as appropriate for people with disabilities. We want to remember that with age as well as menopause, that cardiovascular health can be compromised. So it's important to remember that estrogen and hormone replacement therapy may increase thromboembolism risk, and we need to balance that with an increased risk of thromboembolism that's usually associated with using wheelchairs for mobility. Estimating this risk can be difficult because of just the individualism of each person and that traditional risk calculators may not be appropriate for every individual. Weight gain can be associated with loss of independence, and so we want to watch out for that. Impaired balance is associated with menopause, and this can be especially concerning for fall risk for individuals that are at a higher fall risk already. And just remembering the consequences of estrogen deficiency are important to consider for people with mobility disability, the negative and positive effects of estrogen. So in considering hormone replacement therapy in this population, providers must thoughtfully assess risks and benefits associated with using HRT to treat and relieve some menopausal symptoms. Women and their caregivers should be seen as shared decision makers in this decision. And risk calculation varies according to several factors, including the current quality of life compared to the quality of life before menopause, the personal risk of cardiovascular disease, blood clots, osteoporosis, cancer, and the relative degree of mobility and independence, as well as a concern for decreasing mobility and decreasing independence. So how can health plans with providers take steps to improve care and outcomes for women with disabilities? I think there's a multitude of ways to add on to what Dr. Marks already mentioned, but health plans can encourage, support, and potentially incentivize providers through improved accessibility initiatives to update facilities to be more accessible, for instance, helping purchase new exam tables or renovate restrooms, things like that. Health plans can provide education to providers on bias, disability stigma, and accessible care. And providers can support and improve data collection efforts by ensuring early bone mineral density measurement among people with individuals. And finally, health plans and providers can support research on menopause and dually eligible women with disabilities.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is presented by the Lewin Group and is supported through the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. MMCO is dedicated to helping beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid have access to seamless, high-quality healthcare that includes the full range of covered services in both programs. To support providers in their efforts to deliver more integrated, coordinated care, MMCO is developing technical assistance and actionable tools based on successful innovations and care models. To learn more about current efforts and resources, please visit our website, www.resourcesforintegratedcare.com. You can also find us on Twitter. Our handle is @integrate_care, or follow Resources for Integrated Care on LinkedIn to stay up to date with our recent products and technical assistance.